You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Hey everybody, I'm away this week, and I was going to hang a gone fishing sign here at the top of the show, figuratively speaking. But something caught my eye right before I headed to the airport. Jill Duggar is giving sex advice. Jill Duggar of Duggar fame. Her mom and dad are those deeply creepy dominionist Christians who starred in that awful reality show and that hilarious vagina, it's not a clown car meme. Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar, the smiling public face of the Quiverful movement, which aims to take over the country and impose Christian Sharia law on the rest of us by outbreeding us all. The hilarious hijinks of this wannabe fascist clan were documented on TLC's 19 Kids and Counting for 8 long, miserable cover of Us magazine years. Then we found out the oldest Duggar kid, Josh, molested a bunch of girls and was a member of Ashley Madison, and TLC canceled Mom and Dad's show because of the Josh Duggar scandal. And we all promptly forgot about the Duggars. Well, it turns out the Duggars, some of them at least, never went off the air. The last episode of 19 Kids and Counting, which was originally 17 Kids and Counting, but the kids kept coming. The last episode of 19 Kids and Counting aired on May 19th, 2015. And the first episode of Counting On, which follows the lives of the older Duggar daughters, Jessa, Jill, Joyanna, and Ginger, or Ginger. I don't know if that G is hard. That aired on December 13th, 2015. So don't worry, America. No Duggars had to get a real job in the wake of the cancellation of 19 Kids and Counting. Anyway, Jill is giving sex advice on her blog. You know, it's comforting to know that someone out there is still blogging. It's like finding out you have a neighbor who churns butter. And how's Jill's sex advice? Well, surprisingly, not all bad. There's some good stuff buried under bad takes like guard against fulfilling sexual desires alone and women should always be available for sex. Excuse me, don't women, even wives, have to sleep? Also, she suggests that wives should make an effort to look good for their husbands, but nothing about husbands making an effort to look good for their wives. But still, Jill talks about how important regular sex is to her. She means regular as in on the regular, not regular as in vanilla or don't slap my ass and call me a whore regular. She suggests 3 times a week for young newlyweds, which seems doable, particularly if a couple takes Jill's advice about mixing it up, which is a little like my advice about mixing it up. Here's Jill. And when you may not be able to actually have intercourse for a period of time for health issues, find other ways to have fun and be intimate. All right, pretty good. I think you should mix it up and find other ways to be fun and intimate without a health crisis that prevents you from having intercourse. But pretty good. She also says, be open with your spouse about your desires and change things up to keep it exciting. And then cites 2 Bible verses to support that one. Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 to 4, and 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 5. I looked them up. I don't see the link. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 to 4, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. And 1 Corinthians 7, 5, defraud ye not of one another, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not. All right, I don't see the link, but hey, if a real reach of a Bible verse interpretation makes you feel better about pegging the husband, go for it. Now, don't mistake me. Easily 90% of the rest of Jill's blog posts, like 90% of the rest of Jill's family, is terrible. It includes things like saving yourself for marriage and that sex is only for married men and women, and even then only when they're having sex with each other. But there was more decent-ish sex advice in Jill's controversial blog post than I expected to find. Jill got tons of grief from her readers, and I just wanted to say, hey, Jill, I feel you. Game recognizes game. Haters gonna hate. It's part of the sex advice racket. Welcome. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro-free edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. The Magnum, twice as long and no ads. Dr. Justin Lay Miller joins us to talk about kink. Are men as kinky as women? Are women as kinky as men? It's an age-old debate, and there is new data. All that coming up on today's show. ThredUp is the world's largest online thrift store with over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off retail price. It's the style secret over a million women use to refresh their closets. Get an extra 30% off your first order. Go to ThredUp.com/savage. That's ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by DoorDash. Get $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter the promo code SAVAGE.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hi, Dan and everybody. 30-something lady calling from Canada. My question is, my mother-in-law just left after having spent almost a month with me and my partner in our tiny one-bedroom, no-doors apartment. So it went well as it could have. We did our best to stay out of each other's space. I didn't have any freakouts. I think I deserve the Daughter-in-Law of the Year award. My problem is that I feel like my partner and I, we should be like jumping on each other's bones and wanting to fuck our brains out, but I'm just like not into him. And I know it has to do with how it felt having his mother around, because I just feel icky now. I guess maybe living with them and seeing him interact with her, it just makes me feel gross. There wasn't any sex happening while she was here because him and I, we have very opposite schedules. Every moment that we were like around at the same time was spent with the mother-in-law, and we couldn't really leave her on her own. She doesn't speak any language that we speak here, and she was kind of lost. So I'm just wondering if it's normal to, after see your partner interact with their parent, to suddenly feel little grossed out by them.
Normal. What is normal? That is a word we try to avoid. But if it were typical that when someone spends time with their mother-in-law or their father-in-law, they lose all desire for their partner, we would never be introduced to our in-laws. If that was something that was a known, if that was a risk that people were conscious of, yeah, you might meet the mother-in-law at the wedding and then you would never, ever see the mother-in-law ever again for fear of exploding or destroying your sexual relationship. So yeah, I don't think this is normal. I think this is particular to your circumstance and these interactions you had with his mother. Sounds like she came for a very long time. Sounds like her. You say you weren't having sex while she was there. So I infer from that that you have a good sexual connection with your husband when his mother isn't in your no bedroom walls, one bedroom apartment with you for weeks and weeks and weeks. And mom's presence kind of blew the flame out. And perhaps, as you say, watching him interact with his mother brought up some uncomfortable parallels. You know, his intimacy with her reminded you on some level of your intimacy with him, the way you interact with him, perhaps on a day-to-day basis, the way you take care of him. Perhaps he has maneuvered you into a few places where he expects from you or wants from you the same kind of caretaking that he got from his mother, and that kind of de-eroticized that daily interaction for you in some way that's sabotaging your sexual connection. And in the end, you're going to have to do what I tell so many people to do. You're going to have to talk to your partner about this. You're going to have to take Taylor Swift's advice and agree together somehow to shake this off. You got knocked out of your usual sexual groove by his mother's presence. Something about their interactions squicked you out because they resembled in some way your interactions, your intimacy. And you need to blot that out. You need to not dwell on it or think about it. And I think sex might be a good way to blot that out. A sexual connection, and a good and lasting and hopefully powerful one, is something that distinguishes your relationship with your husband, I hope, from his relationship with his mother and getting back on that horse, even if you have to will it at first, even if you have to lean in, as they say, at first, to being intimate with your husband, to being sexual with your husband, you should do it. Because reasserting that, reestablishing that, even having, you know, not to do anything that you don't want to do, blah, 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 but even having to force it at first, to throw yourself into it and go through the motions in hope of not catching a groove with your husband, but reestablishing the groove that you had with your husband. I think that would be smart. And the place to start is a convo with your husband where your feelings of squickiness can be acknowledged, the oppressiveness of his mother's presence for such a long time and how damaging that was to your sexual connection and how it stopped it for a while can be acknowledged. I think it would be helpful to have those feelings affirmed by him. And then, God, have a half a bottle of wine each or get fucking stoned, get naked and throw yourselves at each other. Grind up against each other until you are not thinking about mom anymore. And your space is now your space again, the space where you have sex with your husband, not the space where you have to look after or help him take care of his mother or with his mother, look after and take care of him.
Hey, Dan, I'm a straight female living on the East Coast. I'm dating a man 19 years older than me. I'm 26 and he's 45. What started as a one-night stand led to us hanging out more and eventually seriously dating as boyfriend and girlfriend in a monogamous relationship. We've been together for 9 months now. He's never been married and doesn't have kids. I was very clear in the beginning of the relationship that I'm not really interested in marriage anytime soon and definitely no kids, at least for another 8 years, as my focus right now is on my career and traveling. He said it was okay and for me to not worry about it and that it was on him. We got past that issue and the issue of our age difference since I'm the youngest person he's ever dated and he's the oldest person I've ever dated. We actually have a lot in common despite our age gap. A few weeks ago, after a great date night, we started to get intimate and then he stopped. I asked him what was wrong and kind of had to pry it out of him. I told him, you know, at the end of the day, we're friends. He was hesitant to tell me, but he said, it's not you. I'm extremely attracted to you. I just have a lot going on in my head. He meets with a lot of clients and patients for his job, and the whole, are you married and how many kids do you have, gets brought up a lot. And we also do live in the South. And this has been getting to him. It also doesn't help that his birthday is coming up and he's not excited about getting older. He tells me those questions have never bothered him before until now. And he never went out of his way to not get married and not have kids. His life just kind of panned out to be that way. Is he kind of going through a midlife crisis? I know that he's always wanted kids. I've completely fallen for this man, but I still stand by what I want. Do I leave him in the relationship now before we get even deeper and it hurts even more to leave? He's a very successful and attractive man, so I know he won't have any trouble finding a woman who does want to get married and have kids within a year or two. I'm just conflicted and I'm not sure of what the right thing to do is. And I can't help but feel a little bit guilty about it.
He's a grown-up. He's 44 years old. He's going to be 45 soon. If he wants to be with you, you can let him make that choice. You can let him choose to be with you. He can be honest about what that means, what he may be giving up or losing by choosing to be with you. Acknowledging his grief, acknowledging his booming, seemingly biological clock or his midlife crisis or his regrets doesn't mean that you have to fix them. Doesn't mean that you have to change your timeline. Doesn't mean that you have to marry before you wish to marry or have kids before you wish to have kids. But if you want to be with him, you're going to have to say, yeah, I get it. You're a little sad because we're a little off. We're not a perfect match around what you want versus what I want. Maybe I'm going to want the things you want eventually, but I don't want them right now. And then he has to decide whether he's willing to wait. You put the figure at 8 years, whether he's willing to wait until he is 53 before he marries and has 9 months later, his first kid. And while he contemplates his willingness to wait, I think you have to ask yourself, is there any room for compromise here? Are you willing to shave a couple of years off that 8-year figure? Are you willing to compromise and, you know, when you're 30, marry or have kids? Not when you're 25 years old, and certainly not marrying and going after kids when you've only been dating this guy who's anxious to marry someone and have kids with someone for 9 months. At 9 months, you barely know each other. At 9 months, you're not farting in front of each other, which for me is the gold standard around how well you know each other. So it could be that in a month or two, this relationship, like most relationships, will have run its course, and all of this marriage and kids agitas will be moot. Red flag zone, though, look, let's go visit the May Day parade for just a second. There's something a little hustly and rushy about a 44-year-old man saying to a 25-year-old that he just started dating 9 months ago that he has this big sad about marriage and kids, marriage and kids, marriage and kids, being rushed into a premature commitment. And there's no commitment quite as massive as scrambling your DNA together. Not saying he's an abuser, but it can be the early red flag that lets you know someone is an abuser. It can also be a false flag. Sometimes people are with somebody for 6 months, 9 months, and they know this is, on some fundamental level, the person they want to be with for the rest of their life, and then they make a lifetime commitment, and Yahtzee, it turns out, through luck, that this person is actually the person that they could be with for the rest of their life, or one of the people they could be with for the rest of their life. There is no the one. There's only lots of 0.75s that you round the fuck up to one. So to cross the streams here a little bit, is he willing to wait? Can you acknowledge that he's making a sacrifice by waiting for you? Are you willing to compromise on that 8-year figure and dial it back to 5 years? And if then you are together 5 years from now, when you're 30 and you're still together, perhaps an engagement, perhaps then a marriage, perhaps then sometime after that, kids a little sooner than you wanted to have them, a little longer than he wanted to wait. Those are the kinds of compromises that make long-term relationships go. But I would ask him to table all further discussion of marriage and kids and sadness about marriage and kids until after you've been together a year, which means closing your mouths about these issues and these topics and spending the next 12 short weeks just getting to know each other better. Because after a year, you'll both have a better idea about whether you're someone he's willing to wait for and he's someone you're willing to compromise for. Updating your wardrobe for the new season can be so expensive, but it doesn't have to be. That's why I want to share with you all the life hack that will make you look good and feel good this fall. And ThredUp is that life hack. ThredUp is the world's largest online thrift store where you can buy and sell secondhand women and kids fashion. Shop over 35,000 brands like Anthropologie, Ann Taylor, Coach, Lululemon, and more for up to 90% off estimated retail. If you're hesitant about secondhand shopping, ThredUp makes it super easy and fun. Customize your experience by saving your sizes and your favorite brands. You can also filter by style, price, color, and condition to quickly find exactly what you're looking for. Every item at ThredUp is triple inspected by hand to ensure it's in high quality condition. Lots of items even still have their original tags on. That's what's great about ThredUp. You get these insane deals, the kind of deals you get thrifting with the convenience of online shopping. Plus, you're helping out with the environment by shopping secondhand. It's a win-win. And you can find top designer jeans like Rag & Bone and Citizens of Humanity for under $30, cozy sweaters starting at just $6, and kids' clothes with the tags still on for only $5. I can't think of a better way to score such deals. With over 35,000 brands to shop and thousands of arrivals every day, you will never have to pay full price again with ThredUp. And for a limited time, ThredUp is offering Savage Lovecast listeners a special deal for an extra 30% off your first order when you go to threadup.com/savage. That's 30% off on top of the already low prices. So hurry and take advantage. That's threadup.com/savage. ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off. Terms apply.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 30-year-old queer woman. I have been with my partner, who is a transmasculine genderqueer person, for 3 years. And this call is not about the relationship. It's a great relationship. We're getting married next year. It's actually a call about a friendship issue. As I said, we're getting married next year, and we have these queer friends who we consider really close friends. So it's my fiance's, one of his best friends, and her partner. We had asked the partner, who is an ordained minister and has values that really closely align with ours, to be our officiant for our wedding next year. And at first he was really excited and he met with us and everything. It's been a little bit of time now. We haven't heard that much. And my fiance today just got a text that not only can he not officiate the wedding, but he can't come. The text was something like he has to present some report at a conference, and this like report is really important to him and this conference is really important to him. But both of us still feel really hurt. It almost feels like a relationship ending move on his part. I don't know. I don't want to be like overreacting or anything, but now I feel like if he's just like not going to, this is like a close friend who was going to be our officiant, and now he just said he's not even coming. So like, I don't want him to come to my birthday. Like, I don't even want to see his face again. Anyway, so we had another incident with this same couple last year where I had planned a 40th birthday party for my fiance, and I had planned it like 6 months in advance. Everybody, I had checked with them over and over again if they were going to come. And then about a week before, they let me know that they maybe were only going to come for the day because they needed time together and they needed to house it for somebody. And I was like, whatever. I mean, I'm not averse to having hard conversations with people. I had a conversation with them at that time. I used my words. I was like, this is a very special occasion. Please, can you like prioritize him for just this weekend? Because he's only turning 41. I'm wondering, like, do you think that this couple is kind of just telling us in so many words that they don't think of us as close friends anymore? And I should just like deal with that? Or do you think I'm overreacting and it's fine because he gave us so much advance notice? I'd just love to hear what you have to say.
I suppose you could have a knockdown, drag out argument or confrontation with your friends about their clearly differing attitude toward their friends, their other friends, milestone life events like 40th birthday parties, like weddings. Or if you want to keep them in your life, you could adjust your expectations, expect less from them, less of them, and as a result, be less disappointed by them going forward. Friendship isn't just showing up for weddings and showing up for 40th birthday parties. A lot of people show up for milestone birthday parties. There's a crowd. A lot of people show up for weddings. There's a crowd. Also, you know, the dates that people schedule their weddings for, other people still have lives, still have commitments, still have high-stakes professional commitments that can be crucial to their long-term career prospects. And if that conflicts with a wedding, that wedding may put someone in a position where they have to choose their own long-term self-interest over their friends arbitrarily scheduled because that's when they could get the barn in the countryside wedding, as painful as that is for engaged or about to be married people to sometimes hear or process, because we want our friends there at that big event. We want our friends to be there for us. But before you chuck these two, you know, out of the canoe, I think you should ask yourself, are they there for you in the day to day? Are they there for you when there isn't a crowd? Have they come through for you again and again and again, even if they whiffed that 40th birthday party by deprioritizing it? And even if then, and, you know, two things isn't a trend piece, but then they also whiffed or weren't able to make your wedding. Maybe you have a conversation with them about what is this conference, what is this paper, and how important is it to your friend to present, and how consequential it could be for your friend professionally if the paper is a huge success, or if, you know, how consequential it could be in a negative sense if they're not there to present. And if that's a big day for them and it conflicts with your big day, you may have to have a bottle of champagne with your other friends sometime, just the four of you, to celebrate your wedding privately, and they may not be able to be your officiant. All that said, if there is another occurrence like this, if there is, you know, if you and your partner decide to have children and there's, you know, a christening or a baby shower or a bris or whatever, and your friends can't make that either, they may be sending you a message that they are dialing back this friendship. And although you are still important to them and they still feel great affection for you and love for you, they're deprioritizing this relationship because sometimes people have to do that. And people don't do that directly. People don't say, hey, we have a lot on our plate right now and we don't have as much time or space for this friendship anymore. Let's stay in touch, but not going to be able to be here, there, everywhere for you like we used to be. Sorry, people don't say that. They just gradually make themselves less available. And when people make themselves less available to you, you can get angry, you can confront them, or you can make yourself for this time, this stage of your lives, less available to them, which is about adjusting your expectations so then you are not disappointed. And then when they do show up or when they do pop into your text messages or you run into them, you can catch up and you won't feel so angry because, again, you were expecting less. And, you know, that sucks, but that happens. If you don't torch the friendship because a friend isn't as available to you now as they were before, who knows what's going to happen in 2, 3, 5, 10 years. You all may wind up back in the same part of the country. You all may wind up having more time and space in your lives, and your friendship may resume, may pick up and revive and grow stronger. Friends can only circle back and reconnect and revive the friendship if they didn't burn it down in anger during that stage of their lives where circumstance and other life pressures pulled them apart. Although I'm a huge advocate for getting up, getting out of the house, doing stuff, and being active in my beloved city or yours, sometimes I'm in your city and I get active there. I do admit that sometimes I just want to hunker down, stay in, not cook, and order some chow delivered. If you're in that mode right now, I recommend DoorDash. You can have your favorite restaurants come to you. DoorDash connects you with your favorite restaurants in your city. And ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only is your favorite pizza joint already on DoorDash, but there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities, so you might find a new favorite too. With door-to-door delivery in all 50 states and Canada, you can order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants. Don't worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you with DoorDash. And right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and remember to enter the promo code SAVAGE. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter the promo code SAVAGE. Don't forget, that's the promo code SAVAGE for $5 off your first order from DoorDash.
Hi, Dan. I am a 30-something married woman in America. My question for you is about my relationship with my parents. I have basically not had any contact with them after this last election. They are still hardcore Trump fanatics, climate change deniers, guns. And I just felt that I did not want to have that toxicity in my life, especially considering my husband is an immigrant. I have a daughter, and they're just not helping the world getting any better. So my question is, my father was recently diagnosed with cancer and he is going to have surgery and, you know, he's going to go through a cancer treatment plan. My sister and my aunt are the ones that told me about this. My parents did not reach out to me. They did not tell me that this was going on. I obviously don't wish any harm on my parents. I just don't want them in my life because I think that their views and their opinions are just so toxic and just awful. So am I an asshole? Am I awful for not contacting my parents and trying to reconcile now that my father has cancer? Should I call him and say, I'm really sorry for your cancer, but I still don't want you in my life because your views suck and are detrimental to the actual existence of my family? What do I do? Am I an asshole?
Sending a card or sending an email does not equal shitty mom and dad, toxic mom and dad back in your life. You can send a card, you can send an email that really comes to a conclusion, that doesn't invite a dialogue, that isn't about inviting your parents back into your life, that isn't about inserting yourself back into their lives. You can just send an acknowledgement. I'm sorry to hear that you're facing this health crisis. You are in my thoughts, period. Do it not for your shitty dad. Do it not for your shitty mom. Do it for yourself. And do it, I gotta say, do it for your aunt and do it for your sister, because those are people, potentially, you don't say that they're Trump supporters. I think you would have mentioned that if they were. They're people you want to have a relationship with now while your parents are still here. So in service of those relationships, sister, aunt, be the bigger person. Be the person that your parents have failed to be. The person who can see someone else's humanity despite their differences. Doesn't mean you have to be there. Doesn't mean you have to visit. Doesn't mean you have to send flowers. Doesn't mean you have to get on the phone and chat every day while dad's getting chemotherapy or whatever for 4 hours in that chair. Just a card. Just an email. And you are in my thoughts. Which is true. They are in your thoughts. You called because your parents are in your thoughts. You don't have to share with your parents every single thing you think about them. So you are in my thoughts can mean two things. I'm thinking you're an asshole. I'm hoping you can't find your mail-in ballot if you live in a mail-in state or can't find your way to the ballot box if you don't come next November. Also thinking, you have cancer. That's too bad. And I hope that you are well and on your feet soon, period. You may hear back from them. You may not. If you hear back from them, you're not obligated to respond. You're not obligated to engage, particularly if you have the kind of shitty conservative Trump parents, Trump families who pull their liberal relatives and progressive relatives into conversation because they feel free to blow up at us in ways that we don't blow up at them. Yeah, you don't have to get into a back and forth, even if they attempt to initiate one after that first contact. And again, I promise you, you will feel better about not them, not their political beliefs, not their attitudes, not the asshole Orange Julius Caesar that they put in the White House. You will feel better about yourself for having sent that card or that email. And it diffuses what could be a ticking time bomb in your relationship with your sister and your aunt. If you don't reach out, if you don't express sympathy now, that may blow up your relationships, relationships I think you value, with them later. A small thing to do, again, not for your parents, for yourself, and for your relationship with your sister and your aunt.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. They make it simple and intuitive to create your website, blog, or online store. You don't have to hire some fancy pants coder or your neighbor's sullen teen to build a website. You can create a beautiful website yourself with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. They have templates that were created by smart designers that you can just drop in and it looks good right away. Squarespace is used by a wide variety of creative types: businesses, musicians, designers, freaks, artists, klezmer bands, restaurants, and more. If you plan to create a website for your business, Squarespace has all the tools you need to get it up and running quickly. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm a 42-year-old woman married to a male partner together for 13 years with a 9-year-old daughter. I'm calling about open relationships and when and how to explain this to your children. My husband and I opened up our marriage about 6 years ago because we were no longer sexually satisfied with each other. However, we still love each other and we had a young child, so we didn't want to break up our family when we knew we could find sexual fulfillment with outside partners, which we have, and that's all been going fine. So, given that background, I have two questions. First, it's really important to me that my daughter doesn't grow up believing that monogamy is the ideal. You and others, such as Esther Perel, have often talked about how nearly impossible it is for one person to successfully fulfill all the roles of lover, best friend, co-parent, etc. I would like for my daughter to understand this too, not necessarily now as she's still kind of young, but certainly when she gets older. So when I start to talk about this with her, should I tell her that her parents have an open marriage? I would like for her to know the truth about our relationship, but I don't know when is the best time for her to know that. It seems like there are pros and cons no matter when you do it. I definitely don't want to traumatize her or give her TMI by telling her too young, but I also don't want her to feel that she was lied to or misled if I wait until she's an older teenager or adult. I was wondering if you would be willing to share when you and Terry discuss this with your son, or if that's too personal, what your general advice would be, or if your listeners would be willing to share their experiences. My second question pertains to the details of me and my husband's outside relationships. My husband has had several flings and short-term relationships with outside partners. I have had the same outside partner for about 5 years. This man is also married and has 3 teenage and young adult children, but his marriage is not open. He's been with his wife for 30 years, and while he still loves her and also prioritizes keeping his family together, he's basically in a, quote, do what you need to do to stay married and stay sane situation, since his wife has not been interested in sex for many years. So whenever my husband and I do disclose the nature of our marriage to our daughter, I'm sure she will have a lot of questions about who our other partners are. And so what do I tell her? Part of me wants to be honest, but part of me does not want her to know that her mom is in a relationship with a man who was cheating on his wife. I know this is a totally selfish question, as I am pretty much a piece of shit on this one, but I would love to hear your feedback about this too.
Hey, you are not a piece of shit. You are not a cheating piece of shit. You know, when someone is in a long-term relationship or a marriage and it's, you know, sexless now and has to do what he has to do to stay married and stay sane for the greater good of both people in that marriage, the person he's fucking is an angel of pussy mercy, not a bad person.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So climb down off that cross first.
Okay. I do feel bad about it, but at the same time,
yeah,
like you said, it's helped me listen to you talk about things like, you know, things that people have to do to stay married and stay sane. And that's definitely his position. So.
Life is complicated and relationships are complicated. And, you know, if you could put his wife under truth serum and, you know, she wasn't going to remember the conversation and say, okay, he's having sex with someone else, would you want to know about it? Or would you rather be allowed to continue to live in ignorance? And, you know, the security of, you know, how discreet he's being, she'd probably choose the ignorance. You know, it would be great if we lived in a world where everybody who had to have sex outside the relationship could have like an open, honest, ethical, non-monogamous relationship like you and your husband do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
mm-hmm.
not always possible. There are,
right,
you know, examples I could give and I've given, and, you know, we've gotten calls from lots of people who are just in circumstances where cheating is the least worst option. And so they cheat and it's for the benefit of both. Or all.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's my rant. Now, that's not what you called about. You called about how to roll this out with your 9-year-old. And
right.
Man, that's a delicate issue because, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, you don't even want to think about your parents having sex with each other.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's social monogamy and sexual monogamy. And I think there are many, 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 many people out there who are socially monogamous. They're perceived to be monogamous. They allow themselves to be perceived to be monogamous by their neighbors, their coworkers, their parents, their friends, their children, who are not sexually monogamous. And their coworkers, friends, parents, children don't necessarily need to know that. I think the danger with kids, though, is that relationship, you know, your 9-year-old is living in your house with you. It's so intimate and kids hear things and they see things. And sometimes you don't know what they've heard and you don't know what they've seen. And my concern is always a kid being put in a position where they think mom is cheating on dad or dad is cheating on mom. And they have to keep this secret to protect their family, to protect their mom or protect their dad, or that this is a weapon that they've been handed. You know, if they have a turbulent adolescence, you know, something they can wield against mom and dad.
Right. My daughter, she, you know, she's 9 and she will see me on my phone and she has seen his name. She has seen his picture. She's asked me who he is.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell her he's just a friend, but she's already in tune and she kind of knows like something is up. She used to refer to him as my boyfriend and
okay.
She wasn't wrong, but I just felt like she was too young for me to explain this to her now. I just don't know if when she's older, if I should, especially considering, as I mentioned in my call, like, I don't want her to grow up thinking that monogamy is like the perfection or the ideal and that's what she should be striving for, because that's just not realistic and her parents are a living example of that. So that's
right.
Kind of my struggle.
Well, there are lots of kids out there who grow up in out poly families, and studies have shown that these kids are no worse adjusted, no worse off, no more emotionally vulnerable or damaged than kids who grow up in, you know, houses where the parents are or appear to be monogamous. So you're not endangering your child by coming out. to your kid about being, you know, open, I sometimes that you have to ask yourself, you know, is this going to be a burden for the child to know? Do your parents know? Do the neighbors know? If you bring your child in, are you bringing them into the closet with you and burdening them with helping to keep this secret, not from you or from your husband, but from the world? And allowing your kid to sort of coast on in a zone of plausible deniability until they're a little bit older, which is what Terry and I chose to do, which I'm not going to get into because my kid does not like me to talk about him on my dirty sex and relationship advice podcast.
totally fair.
I think can be preferable if you're not out to your parents, if you're not out to your family, if it's not something the neighbors could never know, if it's something that could explode your lives, if your daughter let it slip to someone else and then the gossip went around, you know?
Okay, yeah.
You know, if she confides in someone and it gets out and comes back to harm you guys, harm your family, she then has to live with that guilt and would probably rather not have known when she was 9 or 10.
Right.
But like, this is just this balancing act with this. This is a dilemma. You know, if she's overheard something and she thinks one of you is cheating on the other and that her whole family is a lie and that when you guys say I love you to each other, you don't mean it, that can be incredibly destabilizing. So, you know, if she said, you know, that this person you text with, if she's called him in a winking way your boyfriend, she may be asking to be told because she's concerned.
Mm-hmm.
About what he means.
Right.
And what he means is in no way a threat to her family, in no way a threat to your relationship with her dad or your marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she may need to know that. But then like all those other risks have to be factored in. And it would be easier to tell you what to do if you and I both knew what she knew. But we don't.
Right. I mean, the other good thing is that the openness of my relationship with my husband isn't a secret. I mean, we don't like blare it out to every single person, but many people, like our close friends know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have some coworkers who know, some of his coworkers know. Our parents do not know, and our close relatives do not know, but like in the rest of our circles, it's not a secret. So if she were to say something to someone, oh, my mom has a boyfriend, like that wouldn't cause, you know, like a fire.
Well, would it cause a fire if she said to your mom? To grandma,
that would be a little different. but then my husband and I could deal with that. Grandma's getting old, and you know that we could handle that, or we could tell her this is not something that grandma needs to know or something. But it's not like a deep dark secret that no one else knows about. My husband and I are pretty open and out about. Our situation.
As you should be. And it sounds like yours is one of those examples of the kinds of relationships I talk about and sometimes feel like no one else ever wants to talk about or acknowledge, where openness and outside sex saved the marriage as opposed to destroyed the
mm-hmm.
marriage.
Right.
And it's made it possible for you guys to stay together and to love each other and to be good parents together under one roof. So it's a success story. All that said, you can allow your daughter, if you feel it's best, and you guys are going to have to make this judgment call together, to continue to assume you're monogamous, but also to you can discuss, you know, at a family dinner, all the different forms that relationships take. And some are exclusive, some are not. You know, polyamory is a thing that exists. You know, sometimes the parents of queer kids want to know what they can do for their kids. And, you know, looking right at a 10-year-old who you know, has given every signal that they're going to be lesbian or gay when they grow up and saying, look, I know you're lesbian or gay. Let's talk about that. That puts the kid on a spot in a way that makes the kid uncomfortable and shuts down the conversation. But talking in the same room while that kid listens with a gay friend about gay shit or, you know, having, you know, it's not hard to get onto the subject of all the different forms that relationships take with a worldly wise 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be better to have that be something that's being bandied about the room by adults to give them a peek into the wider world rather than having to directly address it with mom. All that said, you know what? The fact that she's calling the dude on the phone your boyfriend, that's just weighing on me. I think that's a sign that she's asking to be told the truth because she already kind of grokked it.
Yeah, she unfortunately saw a couple of like heart and kiss emojis, and so I think that's what prompted her to say that.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to like walk back a whole bunch of the things I've just said and tell you you're probably going to have to sit her down and have a conversation about how complicated adult lives actually are, but how joyful they are. You don't have to tell her, you don't have to give her any more information about your boyfriend. You don't have to tell her that your boyfriend has a wife and he's doing what he has to do to stay married and stay sane. That's like, you know, advanced, you know, calculus and
right.
Give her algebra first before college
but
level math.
That's the thing. I know, but that she's so inquisitive. She's so curious. She will ask, she will point blank ask me, who is he? If I say I don't want to tell you,
you can tell her about him without telling her about his circumstance. He's this lovely
that's
person.
True.
I see him on, you know, these times, and he works here. He does this. He does that. He has a life of his own, and isn't interested in being with me as his primary partner. Nor am I interested in being with him as my primary partner. So it's a perfect arrangement. But she doesn't get to depose you or depose him.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
All right. Good luck.
That makes sense. Thank you so much for calling me back and for your words of wisdom. I really, really appreciate it.
Bye.
Hi, Dan. I'm a tech savvy at Rescue. I'm a 30-year-old gay cis woman from Toronto, and I'm currently having some issues with how to approach a friend of mine. My friend, a straight woman, was recently dumped by her boyfriend of 2 years, and she is understandably heartbroken. She wants to get back together with him, and this has become the topic of every conversation we have. She feels he is being unfair to her by not wanting to work through their problems and try again. The thing is, she never really seemed to be very kind to her boyfriend. For example, if we were out to dinner, she would say things to put him down. Sometimes she would ridicule him for his interests and hobbies in front of other people. If we were out at a bar late at night and she asked him to stay over, and for whatever reason he wasn't able to, she would blow up and storm off and say that they should break up because he didn't prioritize her. This seemed to be a pattern of behavior for her. I believe she acted similarly in past relationships as well, although, honestly, I can't be sure. I've spoken to her about this on numerous occasions, and as kindly as I could, I told her that if she kept acting in these erratic ways, her boyfriend would likely leave. I've also warned her that if he were to leave, she would likely regret her behavior, because she has always maintained that she loves him. Everyone close to this couple could see the writing on the wall, but I don't believe that my friend ever truly thought her boyfriend would leave her. Her now ex-boyfriend has become a good friend of mine because we work together. I absolutely believe he made the right decision for himself, and I completely support him in that decision. My question is, how can I be a good friend in this situation? I feel badly that my friend is heartbroken, but I also feel like she was the architect of her own breakup. And I feel like maybe she doesn't have the right to be playing the victim in this situation. What do I do, Dan?
So if I had a friend who was lovely to me and we had a good time whenever we hung out together and they seemed, you know, everything that you wanted from a friend, engaging, funny, charming, supportive when you have an issue or you want to talk something out. But then I went over to their house and they had a dog, and every time I went over to their house, they were kicking their dog and being horrible to their dog and torturing their dog and abusing their dog. I wouldn't want to be that person's friend anymore. It would make me question who I thought they were watching this person that I thought I liked be so shitty to this other sentient being. Your friend, you're worried about this friendship with this person who was kind of kicking a dog, who's a terrible girlfriend, who was cruel and belittling, demeaning, and treated with contempt this boyfriend of hers who is now your friend as well. Pick a friend. If I had to choose between these two people, if I had to run the risk of losing the friendship of one of these two people, I think the person I'd run the risk of losing the friendship of would be obvious. Go to your friend, the girl, who is so awful to this guy, and say, look, you were a dick, and he broke up with you for good reason, and he is better off without you, and you do not need him back. You need a therapist. You need to work through your relationship issues with someone, because if this is the way you treat anyone you ever are with romantically and sexually, you will get dumped and deserve to get dumped over and over and over again. I watched this play out. I think, and I'm saying this as your friend, he made the right decision dumping you. And as his friend, I would not encourage him to take you back. That might terminate your friendship with her. And that might be for the best. Do you really want to hang out with this boyfriend kicker, this dog kicker, for the rest of your life? And listen to her whine and complain? She was the author, not just of her misery. She was the author of his misery. He got out. Good for him. The only way to address her misery post this relationship is to get her fucking ass onto a therapist's couch and work on this. Be her friend. Lay that out for her. Light into her. You may lose her friendship. So the fuck what? Or she may actually get her ass onto that therapist's couch. And in a year or a couple of years, be a better person. And then when she's in a relationship again with someone else, you won't have to watch these same patterns repeat themselves. And you won't feel complicit if these patterns repeat themselves, because you said your piece. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some of your tweets. Queer Veg tweets, going from hashtag Savage Lovecast to Girls Gotta Eat podcast is so weird. They think pegging is crazy. Bitch, that shit is vanilla. Vanilla is relative. Vanilla is in the eye of the beholder. I don't think pegging is that kinky. You don't think pegging is that kinky? If the hosts of Girls Gotta Eat podcast think it's kinky, that is, of course, their right, their perspective, their subjective judgment. Gyne MD tweets, incredible job on the Savage Lovecast, Dr. Jen Gunter. Long live the Goop Slayer. Jen, of course, always an incredible guest, an incredible writer, and her book that you should get, you should buy, you should read, The Vagina Bible, now on the New York Times bestseller list. Congrats, Jen. Regarding the call we took a few weeks ago about women rejecting short men, Caroline Beans tweets, a woman called into the Savage Lovecast to rant about how superficial women are for rejecting short men, and I am wondering if anyone has broken the news to her about the beauty standards that those same short men have for women, and if so, how she is recovering. Caroline added, she called it the most superficial bullshit ever, which makes me think she has never read the comments below a photo of a woman before on the internet. Yeah, I think I'm just going to let Caroline have the last word on the whole rejecting shorter men issue. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I'm a queer social worker and therapist from New York, and I'm calling to respond to episode 672. You caution a caller about the possibility that his attraction to his therapist will complicate the therapeutic relationship, but I think you're missing the fact that sometimes attraction to a therapist can actually fuel and motivate the therapy and can be a powerful opportunity to practice discussing uncomfortable things with someone whose job it is to acknowledge and hold your emotions without shaming you. Also, depending on the professional background of the therapist, it's likely that it would not be okay for the therapist to ever become sexually involved with the caller, even after a single session of therapy, even years later. If I were to do that as a social worker, I could lose my license.
Hi, Dan. This is a response to your last episode with the person who wanted to make a dildo of their lover and didn't know how to, go about that. I don't think they have to tell anybody that that's their lover's dick. Like, they can just make the dildo and just say they bought that dildo, and only they could know and use it. You don't have to say, like, this is so-and-so's dick. It could just be a dildo.
Hi, this is a response call to the woman in episode 672 who was asking about dental dams. In my last 25 years of professional lesbianism, I have used a dental dam precisely once in the 90s with a girlfriend as a joke. No one uses dental dams. If you want to lick something off plastic, get a candy bar, let it melt, and go to town. If you want to eat pussy, do it bareback.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. You can also record a question on your own phone and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Try to keep them under 3 minutes. I want to send out a very special thank you to Kelsey, who bought a Magnum membership for Ryan. Ryan appreciates it, Kelsey, and so do I. Next week, the Savage Lovecast will be in Chicago, Madison, and Minneapolis. Come join me. Our Minneapolis stop includes special guest Stormy Daniels helping me answer your sex questions. Head over to savagelovecast.com/events to get your tickets now. And my Dirty Little Porn Film Festival, Hump, will be stopping in Sacramento and Denver this weekend. Go to humpfilmfest.com/tour for tickets. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Justin Lay Miller on Twitter at @JustinLayMiller. And be sure to follow Jill Duggar Dillard, that's her married name, Dillard, on Twitter at Jill M. Dillard. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.